Good day. My name is Christy, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Jewish Federation of North America's live audio briefing. It is now my pleasure to start today's briefing. Richard, please go ahead.
Thank you, Christy. Good morning, everyone, and good afternoon, depending on where you may be. Thank you for joining the Jewish Federation of North America. My name is Richard Sandler. I'm the chair of JFNA's Board of Trustees, and I'm speaking to you from Los Angeles. As everyone on this call is well aware, the Middle East is always in turmoil, and currently it's a particularly tumultuous period. In Syria, we ask, is there any hope for peace, or will the situation deteriorate further, and how will it affect Israel? What impact can Russian or American involvement have in a country already entering its seventh year of a brutal civil war? Will Israel react to the increasing Iranian presence in Syria, and if so, in what way? And then there's Gaza. Hamas is attempting to ignite greater conflict with continued attacks on the border with Israel. Is there any hope for peace at this time? One thing we know for sure, no matter what others do to Israel and no matter what Israel does to protect itself, it gets criticized and we get tremendous misinformation. Fortunately, today we have a guest who can fill us into what is really happening on the ground. Our guest this morning is here to help us get a better idea of how Israel views the situation. We're very, very fortunate to have Israeli Defense Forces Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus with us this morning. The Lieutenant Colonel is head of the IDF International Media Branch. Previously, he served as the first Israeli to hold a position in the United Nations Department of Peacekeeping Operations. Lieutenant Colonel, thank you for being with us this morning, and please brief us before we have some questions.
Richard, thank you very much for that kind introduction. I hope everyone can hear me well. I will try to speak as slowly and as clearly as possible. If it's not good enough, please inform me if there's any technical problems. I very much appreciate the time and the opportunity here. This is the first time that we do this in this type of platform. And I think it is an excellent initiative, which I hope will be beneficial for everyone, for those listening, and, of course, for the IDF and for the State of Israel. As correctly said, I'm the short term or the short title of what I do is the basically the IDF spokesperson in English. That's what I do, and I had a branch of 50 people who do all of the public affairs and public diplomacy of the IDF to the world. So we deal with international media, all of the foreign correspondents stationed in Israel. We do the social media of the IDF, the Facebook, the Twitter, the web, or the website in three languages, English, of course, Spanish and French. And we also deal with the public diplomacy, which is part of this conference call. So as you can imagine, quite a busy period since Pesach and until today, busier than usual. And I'm very happy for this opportunity to share a few of our assessments about what's going on and how we see the coming weeks developing, and I'll be more than happy to answer questions afterwards. I'll try to be brief and leave as much as possible time for questions at the end. I just want to emphasize that we are off record. Everything that I'm about to say needs to be kept between us, and no attribution, and that will allow me to speak as freely as possible. So. I'll start with Gaza, and then I'll say a few words about the north. I've spent the last three Fridays along the Gaza Strip in different positions. I've been there in person, seen it up front, behind our snipers, looking at the mobs of Palestinians that have been sent there by Hamas. In terms of numbers, the first riot started with approximately 40,000, 40. The second one a week after that was 20,000. The third one was 10,000 participants. And the last one a few days ago was also around 10,000 participants. So in total, 80,000 rioters have participated, and those are quite substantial numbers. Now, I'm a former combat commander. I was a company commander in Givati, in infantry. I served 5 years inside the Gaza Strip, protecting the Israeli communities there, and I'm no stranger to combat zones and areas and whatever you are exposed to there. I can totally understand people around the world who's, or even good people and Jewish people and people that are connected to Israel, who are being fed whatever is brought via international media. I can understand the unease, and I can understand the complexity of the situation, and perhaps not all of you have good answers to whatever criticism is being aimed at Israel. And I'd like to take this opportunity to say what's going on. What's happening is that Hamas have so far been quite successful in getting global attention, regional attention, global attention back to the Palestinian issue, and focusing it away from the their own lack of achievements, and focusing the anger, frustration, sadness, etc., of the people who live in Gaza, instead of at the Hamas regime, which has now been ruling for 11 years in Gaza. They are now, unfortunately, have been successful in focusing it on Israel. And as someone who has been dealing with international media here in Israel now for the last 9 months, sad to see how many of the international media are really jumping on the Hamas bandwagon and really adopting the Hamas narrative. Now, this event, or this succession of events, have been framed as peaceful demonstrations and as a protest, as a march of return. All of that is hype. All of that is Hamas propaganda. What we really have is Hamas choosing a new strategy, and I'll try to underline it and explain it, what exactly they're doing. Hamas choosing a new strategy after having found out and seen that all of their previous efforts have not been successful. Hamas has been ruling or in control of the Gaza Strip, as I said, for the last 11 years, and they have very little to show for it. In terms of their military capabilities, we have just undermined their tunnel efforts. We now have a system in place which is able to detect tunnels from the air using a fusion of different sources of intelligence and technological tools. And we have located and destroyed 5 terror tunnels dug from within the Gaza Strip into Israel, crossing the border, obviously underneath the border. We have been able to locate and destroy those, 5 of those in the last tunnel, the last 5 months. All of them were operational tunnels that the Hamas was trying to build, and all of them were near completion. That's a new situation. So, and something, a new toolbox that the IDF now has that it didn't have before, and that has changed the situation as much as Hamas understands it. The only real military tool that Hamas still has are the rockets, which they still possess. Our estimates speak about approximately 20,000 scattered around the Gaza Strip, all of them hidden behind civilian infrastructure, most of them underground, many of them near schools, hospitals, mosques, and civilian facilities, making it very challenging for us to identify and target them. But that remains the main military asset that Hamas still possesses. From an international position, Hamas is in a difficult situation. They have no real political backing, and they have no real substantial financial backing. There are still countries and organizations, etc., that support Hamas and their military capabilities, and there are still many organizations and countries around the world who provide humanitarian aid. Ironically, that humanitarian aid is channeled through Israel, through the Kerem Shalom border crossing. Many times we see humanitarian aid, for instance, concrete, being used by Hamas instead of building buildings and improving the civilian situation inside Gaza. We see those bags of concrete being turned into concrete slabs supporting terror tunnels that are being dug into Israel, and I have personally been in three of them in the last 5 months, and I've seen the concrete from up close. Now, what Hamas has done in terms of these so-called demonstrations and marches is they have turned that situation and successfully tried a new strategy of something that is not violent. The media has been happy to echo this strategy, and currently, despite all the death, despite all the violent attacks that have been perpetrated under while these demonstrations have been ongoing, despite the attempts to cross the border, despite the attempts to cut the fence and infiltrate inside, despite the tens of grenades that have been thrown by demonstrators and by Hamas operatives, despite the IEDs that have been thrown towards the fence, the Molotov cocktails, and everything else, all of the other violent and lethal means that Hamas operatives and demonstrators have been using. Unfortunately, the way these events are reflected in the media is still something of a so-called peaceful protest. Now, I'd like to explain the situation from our perspective. We understand that, I don't know how many of you have been along the Gaza border, but if you think of the fence that we have on the ground as something very robust, similar to the security barrier that we have in Judea and Samaria, or that we have along the Egyptian front, along the Sinai border, unfortunately, it's a different situation, and the fence is not a very robust, not a very strong one. And we understand that the fence is the last real line of defense that separates between the angry mobs on the other side, on the Palestinian side, and Israeli civilians living within running distance. 900 feet is the closest one, which is actually less than that. 300 feet is Kerem Shalom in the south, and the Kibbutz Nachal Oz is approximately 900 feet or 300 or some yards from the fence. What we are doing, what the IDF is doing, is defending the fence and defending Israeli civilians living behind it. And in terms of time and space, and in terms of our military mission, there simply cannot be a penetration, and we cannot allow rioters, whether they are armed or unarmed, to cut open the fence, to tear down the fence, because the moment that happens, the situation could be extremely dangerous, and we could have a mob of hundreds or even more than that of the Palestinians amongst those also armed terrorists running for the nearest Israeli kibbutz, and that would be a very serious situation. That is what the IDF is doing. That's what we're trying to protect against. On the ground, I know I am acutely aware of the criticism that we are facing in terms of the use of live ammunition and the growing number of casualties. To the best of my knowledge, before beginning this call, the amount of dead rioters, terrorists, demonstrators, etc., over the last 4 weeks has risen to 39, which, of course, is a high number, and there are still 180 wounded. And I'm happy to say that there are no Israeli casualties, and that's how we intend to keep it. But we understand the criticism being pointed towards the IDF. We are trying to use less lethal means. We have tried different systems over every week, but all of the weeks we have used smoke, tear gas. We have used rubber bullets. We have issued warnings in Arabic, written as leaflets or through the various channels of media, whether it is through our Facebook or Twitter platforms, radio, and even mass communication, all of those in Arabic, urging Palestinians not to come near, informing them that we have no issue with them demonstrating against whatever they want to demonstrate against, as long as they don't come close to the fence and as long as they don't try to tear down the fence or ruin security infrastructure. We have, and as I said, warning shots, etc., and only as a last resort have we fired with, or have we ordered snipers to fire. Again, and if you take into consideration that there have been more than 80,000 demonstrators and rioters over the last 4 weeks, the amount of casualties gets a totally different proportion. But of course, what you'll read in the media is always a sum total of all of the casualties until now, and not speaking of how many have participated and how violent they have been. A little bit about what's looking ahead. We're looking at coming riots on every Friday until the planned peak, which seems to be the 15th of May, May 15th, which is the official Palestinian narrative day called the Nakba Day. That's when they are trying to, that's what they're aiming for, to have the biggest riot at that date. And until that, every Friday, there is, according to Hamas, supposed to be another riot. Each Friday, they're very careful to have a different theme, I would say shtick. Once it was burning tires, then it was burning flags. This time we're looking at perhaps bringing again the young, the children, to the front. And each time it's a different theme, heavily or advertised by Hamas operatives on their social media networks and in the regular Palestinian networks on Al Jazeera and others. So we continue to be prepared for that. The mission remains the same, to defend Israeli sovereignty, to defend Israeli kibbutzim and communities around the area, and not allowing any of the rioters or terrorists to cross into Israel. A little bit about the north. Much has been written lately about the current tension between Israel and Iranian Revolutionary Guard, or Al-Quds, forces in Syria. And Israeli leaders, as well as the IDF, have been quite vocal about what we see and know that Iran is doing, and what our concerns with that Iranian entrenchment or expansion are. If you zoom out and look at the situation, the Iranian forces are approximately 700 miles away from home, far, far away from home. And the question is, what are Iranian Revolutionary Guards doing in Syria, and why are they building military bases? Now, when I speak about military bases, they are building air bases. They are building bases for the Revolutionary Guard, and they are transferring on a regular, in a regular pattern, ammunition, personnel, and equipment from Iran to Syria to different locations. Now, there can't be any, the Iranian involvement in Syria couldn't be explained by anything else but what it is. It is a hostile deployment, and the aim, as we understand it, and it is proven in what the Iranians are doing, is to be able to have forward operating bases from which to attack Israel from Syria. Another proxy force, or another extension of Iranian capabilities close to our borders, and this is, of course, after Hezbollah has been allowed to stockpile weapons in southern Lebanon for many, many years in direct violation of Security Council Resolution 1701. And the IDF has been quite clear that we are not going to allow this Iranian deployment on our borders, and we are not going to be at peace with the situation where the Iranians have military assets, air assets, and other capabilities on our doorstep, which will possibly be used to but an Israeli citizen. I'll say a last sentence before we open it to questions. In terms of our level of readiness, I won't elaborate further, but I can say that the IDF is, of course, very vigilant, watching, following events in Syria, and we have issued through different channels what I have said now about the fact that we are not going to allow such a deployment to become permanent in Syria. So it's a challenging time. To summarize, I say that the IDF continues to face military threats on the full spectrum of military operations. On the lower end, we deal with the lone stone thrower and the so-called non-violent protester or rioter. And on the other end of that spectrum, we are dealing with long-range ballistic missile and classic military threats. And, of course, anything in between. So it continues to be challenging times. Of course, we divide our forces and arrange accordingly. I'd be more than happy to take your questions now.
Okay, thank you very much, Colonel. A number of people have sent in their questions. We probably don't have time for all of them, but let me try to ask them on their behalf. Ann Kelman from South Palm Beach County and Elliot Steinberg from Canada had an interesting follow-up question that I've tried to combine into one question. So with their permission, I will do that. They want to know, how involved is Russia in pushing Iran's activities in Syria, and how do Russian-Iranian relations impact Russian-Israeli relations?
Yeah, that's, I think, a very good question. We see Russia as deeply involved in everything that happens in Syria. It's clear that the Syrian regime exists today thanks to Russian involvement, and we understand the dynamics of the power between Russia and Iran. I'll speak about the positive. The positive is that the IDF, I can only speak about the IDF, not the entire state of Israel, but the IDF has a good ways of communicating and deconflicting mechanisms with Russia, which are being used on a constant basis whenever needed. And in terms of interest, neither, as per our understanding, neither Russia nor Israel, but in this sense, Russia, have an interest in the situation escalating. And I'd say that part of our messaging has been also to Russia to make them understand that we are not going to tolerate what Iran and what the Revolutionary Guard is trying to do, and we expect action to be taken also by Russia, which we hope will serve as a somewhat of a limiting factor, since I think it's clear to everyone that once we say that we are not going to tolerate what Iran is trying to do, then the relevant parties, not only Russia, but also everyone else, have to take that into consideration and act accordingly. I hope that answers the question.
So it sounds like the Israeli-Russian relations are at least on a decent basis where there's good communication. Is that correct?
Yes, I would say that they're on a professional, cordial level, understanding that we are not on the same side of the conflict here. But at least what I can say from my point of view, from the IDF's point of view, we see that our point or our position is being considered, respected, and gets the proper attention that we think it should get.
Louis Saltzman from Chicago asked, what about other countries in the region? How much help can Israel count on from Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, both overtly and covertly, both openly and secretly?
Well, that really is a question that is perhaps for a higher echelon above me in terms of the international, you know, coalitions, etc. But what I will say with regards to the IDF is that the IDF operates under the premises that we have ourselves to rely on, and that the state of Israel and the protection of its borders and our citizens relies solely on the IDF. That's what we're here to do. That's what we are equipped for. That's what we train for. That's what we have our budget for. And that's our the basic understanding. That, of course, that does not rule out the interest in building coalitions and having international support, which is very important, and much is being done behind the scenes on that front. But as to the basic understanding, we understand that we have ourselves to rely on, and we understand that any hard lifting or heavy lifting that needs to be done will be done by the IDF.
Thank you. I understand that. Jonathan Freund from Los Angeles wants to know how these tensions are affecting daily life for Israeli citizens.
That's the good thing, you know, or one of the good things. The task of the IDF is to protect, as I said before, the state, its sovereignty, its civilians, citizens, etc. And so far, the ongoing violence in Gaza and the tension up in the north on the Golan and the Lebanese border have not influenced the life of Israeli civilians, and that's also how we try to maintain it. If you come down to, I've been there, as I said, the last Fridays along the Gaza border, you have a significant amount of Israeli troops deployed along the fence, protecting the communities, etc. And a few hundred yards away, you have ordinary Friday life continues. People preparing for Shabbat and families meeting, keep coming back from school, etc. All of that continues to happen, and that's exactly what we're trying to maintain. The IDF has no interest in escalating the situation. We're trying to provide security, a sense of security, without overstepping and without getting the area into an escalation. That, of course, doesn't rely, or isn't the result only of what our actions. We have Hamas on the other side, we have Hezbollah in the north, we have hostile Iranians in Syria, etc. We have Daesh or ISIS factions in Sinai along the Egyptian border. So there are a lot of very hostile entities very close to us, who are all vying for position and with very hostile intentions. But the shorter answer to your question is that so far it has not significantly influenced the situation, and that is how we will try to keep it.
So related to that question, with all the hostilities that are going on in the area, we always get here in the United States people asking us, and I'm sure a lot of people on this call also are asking, is it still safe to travel to Israel and to come visit?
Yes, it is very safe. We are always happy to have visitors from abroad, especially friends and family, extended family. It is definitely safe. There are no security concerns. We deal with many challenges, etc. But the security situation is good, solid. All of the different security organizations, the IDF, Israeli police, the internal security agency, Shabak, are all working tirelessly to keep it that way.
Good. Well, I think it's important to emphasize that. And as one who has been to Israel under all kinds of circumstances, I have never felt unsafe there. Always feel very, very safe. So let me ask one last question, and then I will let you go. As you said at the beginning of your briefing here, you understand the unease and the complexities of the situation from what we hear and read. What is the best way that we can get accurate information as to what is going on other than what the media is giving us?
That's I really appreciate that question, because it's something that I failed to answer or to say before. We, as I said before in the briefing, we are very active on the different social media platforms. That is, unfortunately, today the only way we have of getting our information out and voicing our words. So we have the official Twitter account, the IDF spokesperson, which is the official account, almost a million followers. I have my own personal, professional Twitter account where I tweet about the most important things. We have our website in English, French, and Spanish, and we also have Facebook. And we issue all of our statements and press releases via Twitter. So and the distinction between the different platforms is that we'll have so-called softer content on Facebook, and the hardcore press releases and real live information will be on Twitter. And then for more in-depth view and or information, you can go to the website as well. So we try to cater to different audiences, different ages, and we also try to have live, and we have live information being tweeted. That I really urge everyone to make sure that you have those accounts and that you follow and get notifications. That, of course, is a good way of keeping up to speed. And I'd like to summarize by again saying how much I appreciate the time that everyone here has taken, and for the organizers, Richard and the JFNA, to organize this. I think it's a great way of hopefully of getting the information out, of arming, so to say, you with additional information from our perspective, from the Israeli perspective, from the IDF perspective on the ground. And I hope that next time when we speak, or if we'll speak, it'll be about great and positive development. But maybe I'll have to inform you about other threats as well in the future. Let's hope not. But one thing that you can rest assured or be assured of is that we, the IDF, will continue to do our job, defend, and to prepare for different scenarios. And as always, your support, concerns, love, and all of that is very important for the IDF, and something that we greatly appreciate. So I'd like to say thank you to everyone and wish you all the best, and shalom from Tel Aviv.
Thank you so very much. I want to thank everyone for joining us on the call today. A very special thank you to you, Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Henriquez, for sharing your thoughts and expertise with us. You know, we all can have our own opinions about what is happening in Israel and different positions of the government, but we all have a responsibility to make sure we understand the facts and we get true information to discuss this very complex situation. So as we celebrate the miracle of Israel and its 70th birthday last week, let me take this opportunity to invite everyone on this call to join us in Tel Aviv this coming October for the JFNA General Assembly. We will continue to explore the important issues that face Israel and face the Jewish people. Just visit generalassembly.org to register and learn more. And with that, I thank you and wish everybody a good day. Thank you very much.